This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss the deteriorating situation in Haiti. According to a UN report, more than 1,500 people have been killed in gang violence this year. Haiti's gang violence has intensified in recent weeks, with heavily armed rivals unleashing waves of attacks, including raids on police stations, the international airport, hospitals, and universities. Haiti is also dealing with an ongoing humanitarian crisis. UNICEF warns that countless children could die due to malnutrition and a lack of health care. Nearly 5 million people, almost half the country's population, have been driven into high levels of acute food insecurity since the surge in gang-linked violence, according to the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification. Joining us are two guests. Amy Willens is contributing editor for The Nation and author of many books about Haiti, including The Rainy Season, Haiti, Then and Now. Amy Willens teaches literary journalism at the University of California, Irvine. Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome, Rose. Glad to be here.
We're also joined by Wedzor Pearson, a journalist with the Haiti-based independent news organization Aibo Post. Hi, Wedzor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Let's begin with you, Wedzor. Given the level of violence and the breakdown of what's happening in Port-au-Prince, can you give us a sense of what daily life is like? According to reports, gangs are controlling 80% of Port-au-Prince. Is that right?
Yes. According to reports, the vast majority of Port-au-Prince, not Haiti, it's Port-au-Prince, is being under control of gangs. Since February 29, there has been an escalating of violence in Port-au-Prince. Until now, the situation, the violence continues. You know, in some neighborhoods, residents from several areas complain about the lifeless bodies found in their vicinity. On March 24, bandits launched assaults on downtown of Port-au-Prince. Over a dozen warehouses, pharmacies, and dozens of cars were set on fire. Around the National Palace, you have the National Penitentiary and other public buildings. Downtown Port-au-Prince is increasingly taking on a dark and deserted appearance. Residents have been forced to flee to safeguard their lives with their children, all things they have. There are still shootings in some areas. Just this yesterday morning, a public servant was shot dead by armed men in the downtown of Port-au-Prince. It is a situation that is becoming increasingly uncontrollable in Haiti, notably in Port-au-Prince.
The Center for Public Center for the Committee to Protect Journalists, just reported a few days ago that the Haitian journalist Lucien Jura was kidnapped as violence escalates in the capital. So, what is it like for you, Wedzor, to go out on the streets and talk to people and find out what is going on?
Last week, I visited a camp of people displaced by violence. 1,500 people have been living in this camp since February. People told me that they have not received any assistance from authorities since then. Of course, it's not systemic because there are local and international organizations helping people living in camps. But in the one I visited, no assistance. When you are a journalist, you know, there is in the events you report, a part that you can describe, you know, another that you can only evoke. What we can report more easily is what we see concretely, is the people with their children and their suitcases fleeing their homes. It's the burning tires, you know, the barricades, the armed men in the street, the burning houses, the frightened people on the sidewalk hurrying to get home, the lifeless bodies found in the street, the resounding noise of gunfire, the blocked roads that prevent the arrival of goods. It's concrete, you can see. This has been the daily life in Port-au-Prince for the past few months, not only for the ordinary people, but for you, for me as a journalist. who are living inside of this situation. But there is another part that you cannot report. At least you cannot report it faithfully. You know, it's all this accumulated frustration over the years, the hatred against the political and economic actors, national and international, who have led the country into this precarious condition. It's the frustrations of these young people who confide to their homes, see their future slipping away day after day from their hands, the losses, the absences of loved ones killed by stray bullets, you know, that you can never describe it. You know, you can talk about it, but not with the same emotions, because every story is unique. Those people are the only ones who can tell you what they really, really feel from deep inside. But in the streets of Port-au-Prince are still dangerous for the ordinary Haitians, but also for journalists.
Amy, can you talk to us about how Haiti got to this point? I mean, Haiti has gone through cycles of violence and instability, but this seems to be one of the most serious.
Well, it started with the earthquake in 2010. I remember the devastating earthquake that Haiti underwent in January of that year, in which between 200,000 and 300,000 people were killed. That's why the gap is in our knowledge. After that, it was hard for Haiti to regain a political footing, and the international movement, which commentator I've spoken to.
Oh, Amy, your line is going in and out.
And I hear other things happening on the line. Okay, go ahead.
We'll mute Wedzer, and hopefully your line will be better. Go ahead, Amy.
So the international community came in and sort of put her on the scale. And Hillary Clinton was a part of this. And got Kelly elected.
Sorry, Wedzer, can you mute yourself? I think there's some people in the room there. Can you mute yourself while you're not talking?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thank you so much. We appreciate that. Go ahead, Amy, if you can start from the beginning again.
So after the earthquake in 2010, which was a devastating earthquake for Haiti and for Port-au-Prince in particular, which is important because that's where the gangs are now, Michel Martelly came to power with the imprimatur of the United States government in the form of Hillary Clinton, then Secretary of State, who came and sort of influenced election results. That's a nice way of saying it, to get Martelly into a position where he could win. And then he won the election, questionably, and went on to run one of the most corrupt governments Haiti has seen. And in Haiti, there's some competition historically for corrupt governments. But he is up there with the great ones. And then he was followed by his acolyte, Jovenel Moïse, who was corrupt in many other ways. And there was infighting between the Martelly faction and the Moïse faction. And then he was assassinated, you may remember, in July of 2021. And then everything fell apart because there was seen to be a vacuum in power, and the gangs that were related to various political factions, including Martelly's and Moïse's and many other factions, plus the economic elite, which also runs gangs, started vying for territory, power, control of money, etc. And that's where we are now. I do point a finger at the international community, something called the core group, which is a bunch of institutions, international institutions and countries that have been sort of pushing and guiding and fiddling Haiti for a long time, including the United States, France, Canada, and many other institutions like the UN, the EU, and because they're always choosing the wrong people to push into the forefront of Haitian politics. They have old ideas of what Haiti should look like based on long-time racist-held views of Haiti. And I think it's caused a disaster for Haiti, and also has been undemocratic. I mean, it's basically they listen to the economic elite, these international institutions, and then proceed to put pressure, which they can put on Haitian politics because they control so much aid and military power. They put pressure on Haitian politics and have bad outcomes for the Haitian people.
Can you tell us more about this, and why is there so much intervention and interest in Haiti from the international community and the United States?
Well, I believe there are two reasons. There's a historic reason for the United States, which is that Haiti found its independence, became the first free, independent Black republic in 1804. And if you do the math, that was the slave uprising that took power from Napoleon Bonaparte's French army, the colonialists. And if you do the math, 1804, well, 1865 was the end of the Civil War in America when freedom was granted by the U.S. government to the enslaved people of the South. That's a big gap. And the throwing off of the enslavement in Haiti became a big problem for the United States and for France, of course, which felt defeated, embarrassed, and also had one of its major, major, most important colonies taken from its hands. That was Haiti, which was a sugar-raising colony and very, very valuable. So it changed the whole world system, and it threatened other slave republics like the United States, who had economies based on slavery. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is fear. Both of these are racist problems. So the Americans have always had a torrid relationship with Haiti because of Haiti's independence and a Black republic to its south, 700 miles off the coast of Florida. And then there's the fear of migration of both people leaving Haiti when things are bad in Haiti. So that, too, influences U.S. policy. And right now, American policy is very focused on immigration, as you know, and that's been a problem for governance in Haiti because the U.S. wants stability over everything more than they want democracy. And they feel they can only deal with certain politicians and certain members of the private sector.
We're talking about escalating violence and the humanitarian crisis in Haiti with Amy Willence, contributing editor for The Nation, who's written many books about Haiti, including The Rainy Season, Haiti Then and Now. Wedzor Pearson is a journalist with the Haiti-based independent news organization Aibu Post. Wedzor, same question to you. What do you think about these cycles of intervention and meddling in Haiti's domestic politics by the international community and the United States? What would you like to add, and what explains it? Wedzor, you might be muted.
Yes.
There you go. Thank you.
I hope you can hear me now.
Yes.
Yes. It's something. Haiti has Haiti has a long story of intervention of the United States and the international community. At the beginning of the, between 1915 to 1924, there was the first American occupation in Haiti. Since then, the international community, especially the United States, have always intervened in politics, in economy in Haiti. As a young, I was just 25, and I witnessed some intervention inside of the elections in Haiti in 2010. So it's not something that you can explain. It's not something that you can explain because, as you know, the political actors in Haiti, the local actors, are always waiting for the U.S., the international community, to come and to act in the things that are ongoing in Haiti. So there is a will of the United States, of the international community, to put themselves in what is happening in Haiti. So according to some experts, to people that I've had the chance to talk about what's going on in Haiti, they told me that it's not something that that you can say that will end tomorrow or after the day after tomorrow, because there is some interest in Haiti, some interest, economical interest, interest about the resources that you have in the country, the natural resources that interested the community, the other people that come from in other countries. So as a young man and as a journalist, I've talked to a lot of people, and I can tell you that a lot of young people are not angry with what is happening, how the international community are intervening in what is happening in Haiti now. So it's something that they are against it. They are against it. But, you know, when you see the local actors in Haiti, the politicians, the people from the economic classes, that they are not acting in the interest of the people. They are not acting in the benefit of the people. So they leave the door open for the international to intervene in their own things that they are doing in the country. And most of the time, the people from foreign countries don't act in the interest of the people. So that creates a kind of circle, you know, a kind of circle that create poverty, that create violence, that create violation of human rights in the country. For example, according to reports, the last mission, stabilization mission in Haiti, MINUSTAH, from 2004 to 2017, several cases of human rights violations, violence, sexual violence, have been reported during these missions. And there are, you know, cholera is made a lot of victims in Haiti. It was brought by the soldiers from the national mission in Haiti. So it's something that bringing us to somewhere that we don't know where this will end and when this will end. So it's something that in Haiti we are against it. A lot of people, a lot of young people from the university, from the rural areas in the country, they are against international intervention. But you know, when you see the actors acting like that, they don't show interest for the country. They don't show that they are asking in a way that can change the conditions, the precarious condition that people are living. So you can say, oh, where this will happen, when this will happen, when this will stop in the country. So it's not something that you can say, tomorrow that will end. So you're just watching it and you hope that tomorrow will be better.
To your point, there was a piece in CNN about the UN Human Rights Office describing sexual violence in Haiti as severely underreported and largely unpunished in a harrowing report that documented cases of rape and forced sexual relations with gang members, as well as surging levels of gang violence in the country. So, Wedzor, as you say, young people, people are dealing with international intervention and then violence and corruption and this, you know, horrible sexual violence. What do you think it's going to take to break this cycle? I mean, we'll have to do a whole other show on that. But what are your thoughts?
There is a mistrust of in politicians, actors, in Haiti. You know, because of all the stories of corruptions, lies, linked with the gangs, etc. All of this fuels a kind of distrust of the population towards political and economic actors, national and international, regardless of who they are. So I think that we will need a serious, a very huge project to the main objective of this big project should be we're building restoration of trust in the politician actors, and this should be possible only with actions and words and speech that is linked to a new era, that is linked to a new way to see things. I think that it requires a huge project, as I said, that can bring people together. You know, the country is divided. You have the gangs, you have the poor populations, you have the poor neighborhoods, you have people that are fleeing stray bullets, that are fleeing armed gangs, that are fleeing violence. The country is so divided over those last years in the country. So it is a must, it is an obligation that the actors see the necessity to bring people together. And to bring people together, you need to rebuild the church, to rebuild the institutions, to rebuild the faith in another future, in another tomorrow that will change the conditions. So all, according to me, all this big change should be linked to this, to the church, in the politician actors, in the people that are acting, that are leading the country.
Amy, what would you add? We have about 2 minutes left.
Well, thanks. In 2 minutes, I think I can solve Haiti's problems.
Sorry about that.
I would say I agree absolutely with what's there to restore trust in political actors. Now, that means a new kind of political actor. I think, Wetzer, that we're seeing, and I don't know if you'll agree, and I have so much respect for you and for Ayi Bopost. That's been an incredible institution for getting the truth out about what's happening in Haiti. I think what we're seeing right now with the presidential council, the interim council, which, of course, has been sort of pushed and shoved and controlled by the international community, but is showing the signs that it can also resist the international community's pressure by not rushing to make decisions to please the international. And I think that that may be a way for them to try to show the Haitian people that they are not going to be the run-of-the-mill PHTK, that's the party of Michel Martelly, politicians who've led the country down into this terrible state, nor are they going to be, you know, sympathetic tools of the business class, but a real Haitian government. I hope that's possible, because we're really at a moment in Haiti that's a crisis moment, with this council attempting to form itself and then attempting to move forward. So much mistrust everywhere by everyone, especially the Haitians that Wetzer has so eloquently described living in these terrible conditions because of the misgovernment of this country so long.
And 1 minute, Amy, you've written pieces for The Atlantic, The Nation. What are your thoughts about media coverage of what is happening in Haiti, just based on the stories that you read?
Well, one of my problems is the unexplained gang. Like, the gangs are just some, you know, popular proletariat thing that has risen up out of the shanty towns to destroy the Haitian people. No, these gangs have been developed and groomed by various factions. They get their guns from the port of Miami into Haiti, to illegal ports in Haiti. The guns come, they're all made in the USA. Haiti does not manufacture its own guns. It doesn't get guns from any other place. Ammunition, which is even more important to the instability in Haiti than guns, because without the ammo you can't use them, also comes from the U.S. So I think there has to be an embargo on this importation, and I'm hoping that that would eventually just stop the gangs from shooting their guns.
Wow. Thank you for bringing up that point, and we should definitely do another show about all of this. Amy Wilentz is contributing editor for The Nation and author of many books about Haiti, including The Rainy Season, Haiti, Then and Now. Wetzer Pearson is a journalist with the Haiti-based independent news organization Ayibo Post. Amy and Wetzer, thank you for your work, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rose.
Thank you. And you can learn more about their work and read their stories at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. You can find all of our past shows at yourcallradio.org and be sure to sign up for our podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.